true fun. It makes us feel nourished and refreshed, happier, healthier, but we aren't getting enough of it. So we're on a mission to reclaim true fun on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Catherine Price wants us to think of a few moments in our life when everything just clicked. And I have this kid memory of the summer block party in our street blocked off from all that car traffic and us kids just going berserk, riding our big wheels and our bikes all over the street and swerving around those potluck tables and grills and adults playing volleyball. And it just fills me with joy to this day. So join in on fun. What comes up for you, recent or long ago? 800-642-1234. Catherine Price's latest book is called The Power of Fun, How to Feel Alive Again. Catherine, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I appreciate you pulling back the curtain that you moved in with your parents earlier in the pandemic as a way to get this book done. And look, I held up my index finger and I said, like, out loud, real, you know, but super duper fun and pandemic, they do not go together. And I even felt a tinge of guilt having you on to talk about fun. So how do you balance fun in life and writing about fun with such a stressful and isolating time?
Well, yeah, I signed my book contract in April of 2020. And so it was definitely an interesting time to start writing a book about fun, especially as I did more and more research and came to conclude that human connection is often an essential element to fun. And it obviously was a time in which that was becoming more and more difficult. But I have to say that the experience of writing my book during the first period of the pandemic and the lockdowns actually really did help me cope emotionally with what we all were going through, because it made me focus more on the moments and the experiences that brought me joy and helped me figure out more concrete ways to prioritize those. So in a way, it was an interesting, helpful coping strategy.
I bet it was. So how do you help us look at true fun? What is fun?
Well, so that seems like it should be an easy question to answer. And surprisingly, it was not, which was fascinating to me, because when I thought back on my own experiences that stood out to me as having been so fun, if I use, you know, very scientific terminology there, but these moments of real fun, we had this really powerful sense of joy in them, similar to what you were just describing from your childhood memory. Mm-hmm. But when I looked in the dictionary, it didn't seem to capture how powerful the feeling was. It says things like, you know, fun is lighthearted pleasure or amusement. There's one that says it's things for kids to have in play areas, which I guess does go to what you experienced. But anyway, but then when I collected stories from adults around the world about memories that stood out to them as having truly been fun, there was just something deeper going on. It was these moments of joy and bliss and energy and feeling truly alive. You know, people told me about some of their most treasured and joyful memories of their lives. So I came to realize that we need a better definition for fun. And the definition that I proposed that I ran by the people who helped me write the book is that fun, or true fun, as I call it, is the confluence of three factors. And that those factors are playfulness, connection, and flow. Mm-hmm. And just to expand on that for a second, so people know what the heck I'm talking about. Playfulness doesn't mean that you have to play games, because a lot of adults in particular clench up at the idea. You know, personally, if you asked me to play charades, I would just run into the other room. it's more just having like a lighthearted attitude and not caring too much about the outcome of what you're doing. So you're doing something just for the sake of doing it, and you're letting go of perfectionism, which is so freeing and so rare, honestly, for many of us these days. And then connection is the feeling of having a special shared experience. And I do actually think it's possible for us to have fun alone occasionally, and for the sense of connection between to be with our bodies or physical environments or the activity. But most of the stories people told me involved another person. And that was true even if they were self-proclaimed introverts. And then flow is the psychological state where you're just so engrossed and actively involved in what you're doing that you can actually lose track of time. So the most quintessential example is like an athlete playing a game, but you know, we can get into flow in conversations or when we're working on a project. It's very different from what's known as junk flow, which is kind of the hypnotized state we get into when, for example, we watch Netflix for 6 hours and don't know what happened to the time. Like, yeah, we lost track of time, but that's different from the active state of flow. So playfulness and connection of flow are great on their own, but when they all happen at once, I think that that's the center of a Venn diagram that represents true fun.
Catherine Price with us, author, her latest book, The Power of Fun, How to Feel Alive Again. You can join in on fun, what you've experienced, how you go about it, 800-642-1234. Catherine, you mentioned junk flow, and you really put a stark difference between fake fun and true fun. And I'm wondering if you could kind of go into what, you know, fake fun is and how we can spot it and try to reverse that in our lives.
Yeah. So I just got really interested in the word fun. I should also say it's probably as already obvious. I'm a huge dork. So I was like, well, it's interesting. We use the word fun in all these different contexts. We use it to, you know, oh, that's a fun dress. You know, we're like, we'll say, oh, that was fun. We should do it again soon. When we don't even think it was fun and we don't want to do it again. Like we just toss around this word fun or we do this for fun, but it doesn't always result in the feeling that people will describe if you ask them to really think about what fun means to them. And I came to realize that there's this whole category of activities and products that are marketed to us as fun, but that don't result in this playful connected flow at all. And that's what I call fake fun. My dog is going to bark in the background.
That's okay. We really love pets, and pets also help us have fun. Is that right?
They do. Unless they're in the room with you trying to get out. So I'll deal with that in a second. But anyway, you know, I realized there was just this, the fact that we don't have a precise definition leaves us vulnerable to marketers and people who want to try to sell us on their products by saying they're fun. And so what I realized is that it's really helpful to start thinking about fun in these categories, because then it's really easy to start eliminating some of the things that are objective wastes of time that have been sold to us as fun. And social media, I'm looking at you. That's probably the biggest one. Or things like, you know, there's nothing wrong with watching your favorite TV show or movie if you're really enjoying it. But I think we all know there's a point at which you cross the line where it goes from being enjoyable to making you feel gross. Mm-hmm. So it's that, like, when you start to binge on stuff, I would call that fake fun.
I was just kind of like choking when you lay it out in terms of our screen life balance and what that is, doing to dilute our fun and spending a quarter of our waking lives on our phones. I mean, that was crazy. So when you talk about social media and how we're using our phones, what is that doing to our ability to have fun?
I think it's enormously disruptive to our ability to have fun. I should point out my last book that actually did lead directly to The Power of Fun was called How to Break Up with Your Phone, mm-hmm. which is all about creating a more intentional relationship with your devices. I think that the way we interact with our phones is getting in the way of our fun in a number of ways. And I should say first, I'm not anti-technology at all. There's many benefits to technology. Who would have wanted to go through, especially the lockdowns of the pandemic, without, you know, an internet connection? But if you think about the way that we're interacting with our phones and how the apps are designed to suck our time and attention from us, they pull us out of flow all the time, because you cannot be distracted and be in flow, and you can't have fun if you're not in flow. So anything that distracts us is going to prevent us from having fun, because it will prevent us from having flow. And our phones are interrupting us and distracting us all the time. So if you are near your phone and it's got notifications going off, or you're checking the news or checking Instagram or whatever, you're pulling yourself out of your experience and preventing yourself from having fun. It also, I think there's a sad irony in the fact that we turn to our phones to seek connection, but in reality, much of what we do on our phones makes us feel more alone. Like when we scroll through strangers' feeds on Instagram, for example. Hmm. So I think that they can be used for connection. There's ways that you can use your phone and it can help you have fun. But in many cases, when we're passively consuming content, it's the mirage of fun, but it's actually not the real stuff. And then playfulness, I think the issue there with so less our phones, but more social media in particular, is that if you're judging yourself, you're not being playful. Mm-hmm. And so much of what we do on social media in particular is crafting these, you know, so-called perfect moments to then post to get likes from people on the internet. It's not reality. And we always have this kind of external judge, or you know, we're performing our lives. In other words, we're not really in them, and you can't, that's not a playful state. That's you're seeking perfection, and you're thinking about how you will be judged, and you're judging other people.
Mm. Author Catherine Price helping us restore a fun deficit, if you will. Latest book is called The Power of Fun. Join in on how you go about finding that playfulness and that connection and flow, and how those come together for you. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Catherine Price. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. We're learning how to take advantage of opportunities for true fun in our life, the experiences that make life worth living. It's a conversation about fun here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kend. Author Catherine Price got me thinking about when we moved here to Wisconsin and I refound my cross-country skis again after so many years in the Deep South and just kept moving them with me. And my spouse forced me to get back out on the trails. And I was sure I didn't have time for it. And the first time I clicked back into those skis, it was just magical gliding through Elver Park. True fun. Join in with your experiences. 800-642-1234. Catherine Price's book is called The Power of Fun. She's with us for the hour. Catherine, I just want to talk a bit more about that moment of getting back into cross-country skiing, because I was certain that I did not have time to do this on Sundays, you know, in the winter months when I've got kids at home, they need to do things. And literally, it was the spouse who said, no, you are going to do this. You don't have a choice. So, you know, how is that, you know, experiencing fun with someone who is helping you make time for it?
Well, first of all, kudos to your spouse, but I think it's pretty funny that he's like, you need to do this.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's really helpful when someone in our life can help encourage us to make the space, because you're right. I mean, like, it feels like we don't have time for this sort of active leisure, if you will. But if you think about how much time we're frittering away on other things, or how we do make time for particular things, it's more a choice. It's more a matter of what we're choosing to carve out time for. So yeah, I appreciate your spouse calling you out on that and helping you get back on your skis. I would say, I think an interesting distinction to make between activities and fun, though, is that activities themselves are not fun, mm-hmm. because fun is a feeling. It's not the activity. And the reason I think that's important to point out is that a lot of times if I asked you, like, what's fun, instinctively, you might start to give me activities that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. And you should carve out time for those things, because those activities that you enjoy are by definition more likely than others to lead to fun. But we all know there's like certain times you do the same thing and it's more or less fun than another time. Like, you probably have had a skiing excursion that was like way more fun than a different one, but you're doing the exact same activity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a useful thing to think about, because it takes a little bit of the pressure off when it comes to trying to pack more things into our schedules, because I think a lot of pushback people have about fun is, well, I can't possibly do that because I don't have time to cross country ski.
Or it's going to take money.
Or it's going to be expensive. Or like, we think of fun as something that happens outside of our quote unquote normal existence, when we're on vacation or when we're doing a hobby or something like that. But one thing that was really helpful for me personally was that when I started to think about fun as the confluence of playfulness and connection and flow, I was like, oh, I don't have to have expensive things to achieve that. I just kind of need to tune into more everyday opportunities, you know, to create those three factors, or just notice when they're already happening. Like, many conversations would fit my definition of fun and don't require skis. But then on the flip side, it also was like, okay, well, what are the activities that most often generate this feeling for me? I think of those as fun magnets, and each of us has a personal collection of them. And I think that's really useful to reflect on too, because once you figure out what your personal fun magnets are, what are the activities and people and settings that most often generate fun for you, then you can make really much more precise decisions about how to spend your leisure time. Because, you know, I think we've got more than we realize available to us, but it is also limited. And in my case, like, I know, for example, that playing music with a particular group of friends is consistently a fun magnet for me. And so I work my schedule around that and I make it happen. And it is so worth it.
Something that happened in your book, you capsized in the Schuylkill River for the sake of fun, Catherine. And I have to say, I know the Schuylkill. I used to live in Philadelphia and do a lot of rollerblading next to it. And I read that part and I was like, oh my gosh, yuck, yuck.
I'm surprised you're even speaking to me. You might think you're going to catch a disease just from over the phone line. Yeah, the Schuylkill is not a clean river by anyone's definition. But no, I was just interested in learning how to row and, you know, getting out of my house. I often use the rowing machine as a form of exercise, but I hate it. And I was like, well, I live really close to the river. It's like one of the main rowing rivers in the country.
Yeah.
And I should just take lessons. And so I did. And, you know, it was a kind of a hilarious experience in general. I had this very funny coach I really liked, who used to just give me a hard time through his megaphone, which I appreciated. But there was just this one day when it was Halloween, it was unseasonably warm, but there was this big rainstorm. I don't know why we decided to go for it that day. And my oars were slippery. And he's like yelling at me through the megaphone. And I go to take, he was like, get away from the bank. Cause I almost was rowing myself into the bank, which was not uncommon for me. And I went to take a correcting stroke and something had gone like horribly wrong. And I was like, oh my God, the oar is not in my hand. And if anyone has been in one, a scull or seen one, they are so narrow. Like if you think about how wide your bottom is, it's like half of that, no matter what, like no one would actually fit in one of these. You sit on it and the oars are what keep you, like you either have to be moving or you have to have your oars on the water in order to not capsize. Anyway, I was moving, but I let go of an oar and I just did this somersault into the skugel. And, but I think what you're getting at is it was just interesting. My reaction, the first thing I said when I surfaced, this is entirely accurate. I was like, that didn't taste as bad as I expected. And then I was like, I think I just got hepatitis. And the coach was like, I think it was probably tetanus. And then I was like, you have to take a picture of this for my husband. Cause I thought it was so funny. So I've got this funny picture of me looking a little maniacal, like in the river with this thumbs up, like grasping onto my skull. But I think the point is that, you know, it's a reflection of, I think, what we need to do in terms of our mindset in order to have fun. And I wasn't consciously trying to do that at this point, but I have strong perfectionist tendencies and I have a lot of self-critical, you know, tendencies, and that voice in my head is quite strong and it's really gotten in the way at various points in my life. But in that particular moment, I was like, who cares? You know, what was the point of this? I'm not trying to impress anyone, clearly, with my rowing. You know, what's the worst that can happen? Well, fall into the river. I just did that. So I don't need to worry about anything anymore. You know, and so I just embraced the absurdity of it. It was pouring out. And my coach ended up making me get back into the skull and continuing to row. And objectively, that sounds kind of miserable. I was sopping wet, you know, it's still raining, like I'm totally jittery. But instead, it was so fun. And he and I were just having this very playful shouting match back and forth. And then when I got back to the boathouse, I announced to everyone, I fell into the river. Like all day, I was telling random stories, I fell into the river. And he's like, why are you telling them that? You were so soaked. Like it was raining so hard that they don't even know you fell into the river because I'm soaked too. I was like, because I think it's hilarious. So anyway, all that is to say, I think that one of the most important things I found we can do to make it more likely for this feeling of fun to occur is to not take ourselves too seriously. You're going back to that playful spirit. Like, why does it matter? Like, who cares? You know,
and because, right, if anyone had been judging you in that moment, or if the coach had been like trying to improve your stroke, or you're thinking about trying to get better at it, you still might be having fun, but you really, once there is that criticism in there, then that kind of changes the emotion.
Yeah, I think the relationship I had with the coach was also like that dynamic. Like it could have been a coach where he's like, you let go of the rope, like, come on, you know, but instead he was like, why'd you do that? Like, cause he'd given me the oars. They were especially slippery oars. It was just like a very funny back and forth.
Yeah.
But I think I was trying to get better. Like I did have, I don't think you need to do it without having any goal of trying to improve or learn, but not being too upset if you fail. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key, or not being too upset if it goes horribly awry, you know? And like, honestly, that's the lesson I remember from the whole summer that I rode, was the time I fell in the skugel. The other ones kind of blend together, but I do remember that one very clearly.
Catherine Price with us, author of The Power of Fun. You can join in on fun and how you make it, how you see it, 800-642-1234. Catherine, you also look at the science of what's going on in our heads when we're having true fun and the role of dopamine. What's going on there?
Well, I really get interested in what's going on in our bodies when we experience our environments. I have type 1 diabetes, so I think that that's where it came from, that I have to think about what food does to my body all the time. But then I got really interested in what our interactions with our phones do to us. And then I got really interested in what the experience of fun might be doing to us. And one thing I found fascinating is that there's very little research that's been done on fun per se. Very little. Actually, one of the top hits I got when I looked up fun in PubMed was an article about toenail fungus. And it was called Putting the Fun in Fungi. And I was like, that's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, and I think that might be for a variety of reasons, two of which are that we don't have a very good definition of fun. until now. But then also because it seems frivolous. Like, we think of fun as frivolous. If you had a research, you know, you're making a decision about what to give money to, and one person's researching fun, another person's researching cancer, I think we can all agree which one is probably going to get the funding. But if you look at fun as this confluence of playfulness and connection and flow, there's actually a lot of research on each of those three states and how they're extremely good for us, both mentally and physically. And if you put all three together, I mean, and no one has studied all three together that I'm aware of, but I think it would make sense that if they're good on their own, they're also good together. So I think fundamentally the reason we should prioritize fun is that it is fun and that it makes us feel alive and we deserve to feel that way. But if you want to have justification for why we should be prioritizing it, there is a lot of science behind the value of human connection and how, you know, loneliness in particular, loneliness and isolation don't just feel bad, but they're actually bad for us on a physiological level, to the point that the risks of loneliness and isolation have been compared to the risks of smoking 15 cigarettes a day, which is crazy. You know, they're thought of as a fertilizer for other diseases.
Well, let's.
And so, yeah,
we just need to pause right there with Catherine Price on Moments of True Fun. And we'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on The Ideas Now. We're talking about creating true fun and how to make moments in our life that make us feel alive. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Catherine Price tells us there are micro doses of true fun, and I'm thinking about sitting on a bed with my kids in a hotel room and playing Uno for hours on end, eating potato chips and candy. Nothing else going on in our orbit. It's a little boost of true fun. Join in 800-642-1234. Catherine Price's latest book is called The Power of Fun, and she's with us for the hour. Let's bring in Stan now in Germantown. Stan, how do you see fun?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So, you know, I'm a pretty outgoing guy, but one of the biggest ways I have fun is pulling weeds in my garden, which I know is maybe kind of an unusual thing, but I guess I just like the author's comments on solo fun, where you're just all by yourself doing your thing.
Yeah. So do you feel like a different type of person when you're out in your garden? What's going on?
It is just like being one with nature, being one with the moment, just kind of me in my own little universe with doing something I like.
Stan, thank you. Catherine, what about that solo fun?
Thank you for sharing that story, Stan. I love that, you know, that might be the most beautifully, and I mean this with all the respect in the world, the most beautifully mundane example I've heard ever of true fun, just out pulling weeds. But that's great. It actually makes me think of a conversation I had recently with this man named Stephen Kotler, who's the founder of the Flow Research Institute. And he's also an author, but he researches flow in particular. And he was telling me about this really fascinating aspect of flow, which is that one of the things that happens in our brains when we're so engaged in what we're doing that we're in a state of flow is that we actually sort of, the parts of our brain that kind of separate ourselves from the world, like our sense of where our boundaries of ourself is, if that makes any sense, actually are deactivated. So Stan, when you were talking about feeling like you were kind of one with nature and your surroundings in this state of flow, that was what came to mind. I just find that fascinating that there's something in our brains that gets shut off that actually leads to, or is thought to lead to, this sense of connection and oneness that so often accompanies flow and, for that matter, fun.
I wonder if you feel that or experience that, do you feel attracted to want to have more of that? What is that tendency like?
I think once you get a taste of fun and remember what it feels like, you will want more, which is, I think, what we need to, like, if you're resisting this idea and you're like, yeah, I don't know, maybe you haven't had fun in a while. Cause I do think it is really like, oh, wait, that's what that feels like. Oh, that's what it feels like to really feel alive and joyful and engaged and present. And suddenly when you experience that, you'll find yourself much less drawn to things you might formerly have classified as fun, like, you know, scrolling through your phone or whatever, because you realize, oh, wait, no, this other stuff feels much better. And in my experience, at least, and the experience of the people that I've heard from, there is a self-perpetuating aspect that you begin to have this intrinsic motivation to seek out more and more circumstances and situations that could lead to this feeling of fun.
I found it hard for me to figure out first what are like three moments of fun that I could really, you know, seize upon and be like, yep, I had that playfulness, connectedness, and flow. And it took a while, like maybe more than a day. How would you suggest journaling or trying to get connected to what it is that true fun is for that individual person?
Well, first of all, you're not alone in finding it hard. So I, as part of my research, I reached out to people on my mailing list and I asked them to do just that, to send me three examples of memories that stood out as fun. And a lot of them said, wow, this was much harder than I thought. So you're not alone. Mm-hmm. But I would say, don't have high standards here. Like, you're not trying to find something that was profound. You're just trying to find something that you thought was so fun. So like, I had a moment of true fun that was, you know, car karaoke on the way back from a wedding sometime before the pandemic with a couple of friends in the car singing Bohemian Rhapsody, right? Like, that's not a profound or earth-shattering moment, but it was so fun. So, you know, let it kind of percolate. It might take a little bit, but in terms of a daily practice, one thing I recommend is just paying attention to moments in your everyday life, no matter how mundane, that make you feel some combination of playfulness, connection, or flow. Actually, maybe not even a combination. Just notice when you're in any of those three states. And if you're into this idea, you can actually turn this into a practice where before bed, just, you know, write down a couple of these moments and then label them with a P, an F, and or a C, playfulness, connection, or flow, depending on what you experienced. Maybe do that in the time you'd normally spend scrolling through your phone and put your phone in another room, right? Mm-hmm. And then you might start to notice, wait, like, even if you're not feeling like you're having a particularly mind-blowingly fun week, you probably are still having these micro moments of playfulness or connection or flow. And I think there's a real benefit. In fact, I just don't think this. It's been proven that there's a real benefit to actually labeling your experiences so that you can then appreciate and savor them. So, and you're giving a name to something. And once you have a name for something, you appreciate it more. You know, like, for example, now that I've done some home renovation projects, I know a lot more words for like house parts. And now I'm able to look at the house and see different things because I have names for them. So I think the same is true for fun.
You also want us to have ways to look forward to the next fun thing because, you know, fun does take effort. You have to perhaps schedule a babysitter, or you have to really carve it out with a friend or a loved one to say, let's do X. Or so how do you kind of balance that out with the spontaneity of something that's just fun versus the we have to work to make this a fun moment?
Yeah, well, we've all had the experiences of trying to make something fun and then it fails completely, especially parents where you're like, this is supposed to be fun. You know, darn it. Like, why are you appreciating this fun thing I organized for you? So you never want it to feel like work. That's when you're pushing yourself too hard. The last thing any of us need is to add to our to-do lists in a way that feels burdensome. So I think it's a combination. There's the element of opening yourself up to moments of fun that already exist. And that, I think, means making space for it, putting yourself in more context in which fun is likely to occur. You know, identifying your fun magnets. And then there is the element where you are going to have to put some work into it, because let's face it, it's easier to sit on your couch and watch Netflix, or it's easier to sit there and scroll through your phone. It takes more work to call up a friend and create a coffee date, or, you know, plan a vacation or anything, go skiing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's worth it. So I think there's a combination. It's putting yourself in the context where it's more likely to occur, noticing these moments that are already occurring with no work on your end, because there are these moments. You know, we're just, our minds are naturally trained to focus on things that cause anxiety and fear, because that's an evolutionary strategy that has helped our species survive, because those are threats and you need to be aware of threats in order not to be killed, right? So, but now that we're in a state where most of those threats are emotional in many cases, it's really worth putting some effort into focusing on the positive. And I just want to acknowledge, like, this is a really difficult week to be talking about fun. And if anyone's just feeling this deep, I don't know, discomfort with the conversation we're having and then the news stories that are being interspersed here, I hear that. And I guess what I would say in response to that is that I think it actually speaks to how important it is to prioritize these moments of fun, because they give us the resilience that we need to cope with some of the truly awful things in life. And just throwing that out there, there's a lot of research that's been done on how positive experiences don't just feel good in the moment, but they build up reserves so that we can cope with periods of future stress. And in the case of fun in particular, there's this element of human connection and just humanity that I think is just so important. I'm like choking up as I'm saying this. So just want to acknowledge that, though, because that's definitely a current running through the week.
Oh, thank you so much for that. Catherine Price with us, author of The Power of Fun. You can join in with your experiences, your questions about making true fun. 800-642-1234. Marcus is joining us from Milwaukee. Marcus, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'd just like to say first, light a candle, don't curse the darkness. You have to be the light when it seems that there is no light. In terms of the flow state, I know it's kind of, again, like she just said, it's hard in the times we live in. The best way I can describe the flow state when I'm working on a piece of art is it's knowing in my soul, in my very being, that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing without question, without exception.
Mm. What kind of art do you do? Can you describe it to us, Marcus?
Yeah, I do everything from abstract to painting on doors that I remove when I do remodeling and construction for people.
Mm. Thank you so much for that. Catherine, go ahead.
Oh, I literally just pulled out a pen and wrote down that light a candle, don't just curse the darkness. So thank you for that. I think that's really powerful.
Mm. How does doing art, and that too can be a very solitary practice, how does art affect us with whether it's flow or true fun?
I think in many ways, you know, I think that obviously there's so many forms of art and you can do it alone. You could do it with people. You could create art alone and then share it with people. But mm-hmm. I think fundamentally what stands out to me is that there's an element of play in art, even if it's very serious art, but it's creating something for the sake of creating it, you know, even if there is a message behind it. But I think that it's, yeah, very pro art, you know, I'm not really sure what to say there other than there's a lot of overlaps between flow states enhance creativity, which in turn would lead to art, but then the act of creating art itself will put you into a flow state. So I think there's a lot of things that feed into each other in a really positive spiral here.
It doesn't really matter which you start with. But you can also acknowledge, you know, there are people thinking like myself, well, I can only do stick figures. I am not an artist. I don't go there. So how do you also address
my stick figures are like bad. Well, first of all, okay. There's this great book by Tom Vanderbilt called Beginners, The Joy and Transformative Power of Lifelong Learning. And he makes this fantastic point that I offer to everyone out there, including myself, which is that I can't draw anything more than stick figures, .. yet. Like, have I tried to draw anything more than stick figures since I was 5? No. So we have this weird concept as adults that we're fixed endpoints, that we're done. We can't change, you know, like what happened? Like when we were 16, we became impossible to learn anything new. So for me, for example, like I've started learning the drums. I never would have thought that I would be a drummer. I don't know if I'd say I'm a drummer yet, but I play the drums now, right? Like, and I started doing that when I was like 40. So we're not finished until we're dead, and we're not dead. So get that out of our heads. With that said, I will say, going back to this concept of fun magnets, like for some people, exploring art would lead to true fun. For other people, it might not. You know, we each have these different activities that are more or less likely for us to lead to fun. So I'd say give it a good college try. Like, don't write yourself off or write it off just because you haven't really tried it. But if you try it and then you decide it's not for you, don't beat yourself up. The example from my life for that is improv comedy. I love improv comedy. I love the philosophy of it. It's just so amazing. But when I took an improv comedy class, going to the comment I made about charades and I'll run in the other room, I can't pretend. And so that was a miserable experience. And I thought that I had to push myself and take another class, just keep pushing through it. And then at some point I'm like, no, you tried it. You tried it. It truly was not for me. So say no, and then you clear space for more things to try.
Author Catherine Price helping us to prioritize fun. You can join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Catherine Price here helping us to ponder the question, when was the last time you had true fun? Join in 800-642-1234. Her latest book is called The Power of Fun, and Catherine is with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to John in Madison. John, what would you like to bring up?
Hello, Catherine. My question is on the importance of cultural habitus and group cooperation in the context of fun. I had an instructor, a French professor, who insisted that sentences like, it will be fun, we're having fun, were simply too American to be translated into French. And I'm curious how the importance of cultural thought and cooperation will reflect a group's ability to create fun.
Fascinating. Catherine?
Well, it's interesting because I had a conversation with someone who was French Canadian, and I asked what the word was for fun. And they also said there wasn't really a word for fun. So I think that it is a universal feeling that people get, even if we do not have a word to describe it, or we don't use the same word. But I am also fascinated by the differences in language, just not just with fun, but just in general. What words do we have? Because going back to that idea of, you know, even knowing the words of house parts, you see a house differently. If you have different words for different emotions, then I think you notice those differently. And, you know, it's like how there's a word for everything in German. Or there's this great book called The Meaning of Lif, written by the guys who did the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where they took they took place names from all these random tiny, tiny towns in England, and then they gave them definitions for things that should have words, like the experience where you're walking down the street and there's a stranger and you both do like the wobble back and forth that they like trying to avoid each other in sync. Like, what is that called? What's the word for that? So I don't really have a particularly hugely deep thought on that, but I do think that there is an effect that comes from having words to describe things. I haven't done like a cross-cultural thing about fun per se, but I did have, actually, now that I think of it, when I was collecting stories about fun, I did have people from all around the world sending in stories. They were not just Americans. They presumably spoke English because they were writing to me in English, but this feeling of playful connected flow did seem to be universal in people's experiences. So that's more of just some rambling thoughts in response to that comment, but that is what comes to mind.
John, what's coming up for you there?
Well, I did learn to really have fun reciting French poetry. The group cohesion thing, I think, really this flow state, as you've commented, that it is not just an individual experience to have fun when in a group. And you'll learn to love poetry, reciting poetry. Yep.
Well, that makes me think about the there's this phenomenon that's totally forgetting who coined this term, but anyway, it's called collective effervescence. Adam Grant wrote an article in the New York Times not so long ago about it, but it's someone else who coined it. Emile Duche, someone out there knows who I'm talking about. Anyway, collective effervescence, which is the feeling of energy you get when you're with a group of people. So like reciting poetry, French poetry, or otherwise alone in your room is going to feel different from doing it with a group of people. And I think that's something we all missed so much during the pandemic. And it definitely is a major contributor to and result of fun. It's just feeling of shared energy. I mean, think about when you've been in like a buzzing room or you've seen a show and everyone's laughing together, or you're at a concert and everyone's singing along. That feeling of this energy with other people, this effervescence, I think is really important.
Isn't that what you kind of experience when you're playing the guitar with your group?
I think so, but I think that is a slight difference where it's not necessarily we're creating something together, but it doesn't need to be as big of a group. I think with collective effervescence, it's probably more than just like two people. It's like the feeling, the buzz you get from being around lots of other human beings who are just kind of, you know, I mean, I don't know. We can get very, try to parse it out too much, but I just like the effervescence angle.
Yes.
The bubbly.
Yes. John, thanks for the call. Mary now in Pewaukee. Mary, what are your true fun experiences?
Oh, well, thank you, because we certainly need this subject right now. But write this down, this indoor thing we did last night, a movie called A Dog's Purpose. It was all like heart-wrenching. Oh, my, heart-wrenching. It was such a story. It was amazing. And my husband even cried at the end. We just loved it. And an outside thing we did, I had a birthday last Saturday. We went to see a local band. So, of course, a few cocktails were included. But the band member happened to be someone my husband knew from high school. He ran into several other people he went to school with so many, many, many years ago and reconnected. We have the best time dancing. My husband rarely dances. And just to see that smile on his face and I enjoyed my birthday thoroughly, and it'll be a memory forever.
Oh, Mary,
thank you.
Yes, thank you for sharing those moments. Catherine, and I mean, she brings up dancing. So.
Well, what stood out to me about that there is that when I hear people share these moments, I find myself with a big smile on my own face. Mm. And I don't think that's unique to me. There's something wonderfully contagious about hearing people reflect on their fun experiences, and you can actually hear it in their voices. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt your joy there, Mary, you know, and I imagine that, yeah, the serendipity and the, like, well, that was collective effervescence too, but the fun that you guys experienced just brings a smile to my face. So I think, again, like, if we have more fun ourselves and we help other people to step out of their own insecurities and their self-criticism and experience it for themselves, like, presumably something happened that helped your husband, besides the cocktails, step out of his normal way and dance and connect and have fun. You know, it's actually a gift that we can give other people to help them let go in that way.
Wendy now in Madison. Hi, Wendy.
Did you mean Linda?
Oh, I'm sorry, Linda.
That's okay. I just wanted to make one comment that, if you're involved in a passionate thing, like I used to have horses, and I get migraines on a regular basis. Whenever I went down and was dealing with the horses, I had no migraines. As soon as I left the farm, they came back.
Oh, wow.
I was so involved in my passion that I didn't even notice the migraines. So it's not only fun as being something psychological, but it might be fun as being something physical.
Mm, that's really interesting. Catherine, what might be going on there?
Yes, and thank you so much for bringing that up, because that was what I was alluding to before the break about how fun actually has physical effects. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're connected, because as I was saying, you know, and in that case, it might be to the horses, but the loneliness and isolation is so bad for us physically, but also the relaxation that comes when we're in a flow state, when we're fully present. You know, we're not ruminating about the past. We're not anxious about the future. We are just in it. And that actually is really good for our bodies, because being stressed out, when we refer to feeling stressed out, it's an elevation in stress hormones in our bodies, including cortisol. And that's well known to be really bad for us over the long term, raising our risks for all sorts of diseases. So one of the things I came to believe and do believe that, you know, blows my mind, but I think is true, is that having fun is actually a health intervention. And that's exactly what I think you're getting at. That's a very concrete example about how allowing yourself to be totally engrossed in an enjoyable activity didn't just feel good to you emotionally, but it actually caused your migraines to temporarily go away. I mean, that's really cool.
That is really amazing. We only have a few seconds left, but if there's anything that we could do today in our lives to make more true fun, how do we do that?
Well, I've got to check out my book and my website, screenlifebalance.com. Lots of resources there. But I would say one thing I love doing is noticing delight. And that's a very simple practice inspired by this book, The Book of Delights by Ross Gay, who's a poet. And basically, go through your day and just notice anything that delights you. It could be something, you know, beautiful, like a spring flower or the sun after several days of rain. It could be something absurd, you know, that just makes you laugh. You know, I saw a man biking down the street the other day while playing a saxophone, and my daughter and I looked at each other and said, delight. Just anything that delights you. And when you notice those things, put a finger up in the air and say out loud, delight, which will make you feel very silly, but it's actually been scientifically validated to, you know, if you notice something, name it, accompany it with a physical gesture, say it out loud, and ideally share it with someone else. It will boost your mood. So I have a bunch of delight text chains I have with people, which I think is a great use of your phone. But my suggestion would be to notice delight.
Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Catherine Price, The Power of Fun. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.